Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
I'm your co-host, Jace, along with my buddy, Manny.
Hello once again.
So we have started the chronology in earnest now. We are on the first book in chronological order of the Top Cow universe, and that chronology is courtesy of Condor on the comicvine.com website. So we started out doing the first 8 issues of Witchblade because neither Manny nor I had ever read any of the Top Cow Artifact Universe books. So we read those just to kind of familiarize ourselves with the world and the universe a little bit. And now we've started in earnest with the first book as far as historically in the Top Cow universe. So this is Tales of the Witchblade number 7, which was actually published in June 1999, but the book is set in Egypt in 1000 BC. So normally for the books that we're going to cover, you can go to either instocktrades.com and buy the books there, or Comixology, where you can get digital copies. Unfortunately, I couldn't find Tales of the Witchblade on Comixology, and it's not in print anymore, so you won't find it on instocktrades.com. But I did see several copies of the trade on eBay for about $3 plus shipping, so that's a reasonable price. And there's also a lot of single issues on eBay as well. Or perhaps you can check your local comic shop and get lucky.
If you can't find them, I don't think it would be a huge deal. If you want to follow along, Manny and I will give a synopsis, and you're probably not missing out on too much. Although I will say that this issue is very enjoyable. What do you think, Manny?
Yeah, it's maybe it's because it has a more proper setting for the Witchblade.
Yeah, also, it's nearly 4 years later in real time. Late 95 was kind of in the midst of that 90s grim and gritty feel. By the middle of 99, the crash has happened. And so, you know, the books that survived and the creators that are there, you know, they're there for the love of the medium. And it's not, I would say this time period, the quality books were starting to reappear. And you didn't have so much garbage on the stand. So I'm sure that has to do with it also. Let me go over the creative team for Tales of the Witchblade number 7 real quick. Writers, Bill O'Neill and Michael Turner. Pencilers, Ken Chua, Clarence Lansang, and Christian Zanier. Inkers, Matt Banning, John Livesay, Andy Owens, and Sean Parsons. And on colors, we have Richard Horry, Tanya Horry, Matt Nelson, Peter Steigerwald, and Jimmy Yu. So quite a few creators worked on this book. So let me give a brief synopsis real quick. I'll first of all say that the cover by Michael Turner is very striking. I like that cover a lot. We have a woman on the cover wearing a classic ancient Egyptian headdress toward the middle to top of the cover, and then on the bottom we see some pyramids in the background with a figure in shadow in the foreground. So the book starts out, we meet Prince of Egypt, his name is Sala, and we see that he's waiting for a woman. He says, "My love, I thought you'd never return." She states they've only been apart for a few hours. And he says that even a few hours is more than he can handle. And the woman kind of appears out of nowhere in this swirling sand or dust. So right away we're given to believe that she has some kind of powers. Meanwhile, outside the palace, a litter arrives carrying a princess. And the princess has journeyed far to meet the prince. And the princess's name is Raquel. She's there to, as I said, see the prince. And we learn quickly that this prince and princess are to be married, but as she's waiting for the prince and waiting, she grows impatient. She goes to the prince's chambers to see him, and we see the prince lounging with this woman who had appeared, and we learn that the woman is apparently a goddess of cats, known as Bastet, and that they are in love. The prince and this Bastet goddess are in love. And even though the prince may marry Raquel, she'll be nothing but second place. And the princess is extremely concerned, both for herself, she doesn't wish to be second, and for the prince, because she believes that mortals who entangle with gods are always doomed.
She goes to ask her mother advice. Her mother says that Princess Raquel must do everything she can to remove Bastet from the prince's life. Otherwise, she'll be nothing but a pharaoh's consort who will be mocked from here to Alexandria. So that night, as the prince meets once again with his goddess lover, we see that Raquel prays to the Egyptian gods for some help in defeating Bastet, and she is answered by the lord of the underworld, Anubis. He tells her that there's a cave 3 miles south of here. You must go tonight, and there will be a gift there for her, which will help her defeat Bastet. So she leaves immediately. She goes to the cave. There she finds the Witchblade. She says, "By the might of Osiris, it's nothing. A weapon of war. No, not even a weapon. Armor. Anubis, what good can this thing do to me?" So she puts on the Witchblade, and she immediately feels his power. She starts to panic as the armor starts to envelop her. She says, "Guards, help me." As the guards rush up to her, she says, "No, stop." And the Witchblade reaches out and stops the guards by killing them. So she formulates a plan. Now that she has this power, she sends a message to the prince to meet her at a new pyramid that he's building in honor of Bastet. She then traps the prince and says that she will force the goddess to release him. She says, "I'm going to show you that Bastet doesn't love you, just like I promised I would." She wants the goddess to show up, and along with Sala, she's also trapped snakes. So if Bastet was to free Sala, she would release the snakes and endanger herself, and that would prove that she actually loves him. If she just leaves, it would prove that she never loved him at all, which is what Raquel expects. So Bastet shows up, and apparently they're going to fight, but that'll have to wait for next issue. We get it to be continued. So that's the basic plot of the story. Pretty interesting. I agree with what you say, Manny. Definitely a good setting for the fantastical power of the Witchblade. And although the Witchblade is in the cave, where Anubis says it will remain till morning, Anubis did not create the Witchblade, nor did any of the Egyptian gods. We still, to this day, as far as I know, do not know the origins of the artifacts in the Top Cow universe. I just recently listened to an interview with Matt Hawkins where he stated that even they are not sure of the exact origins of the artifacts. They have kind of some broad strokes, some general ideas, and to hear Matt Hawkins tell it, maybe they're just waiting for the right writer to come along with the right idea, and they can tell the actual origins of the artifacts, including the Witchblade. So thoughts on the specifics of the story, Manny?
Well, given the setting and the characters, you know, it's done really well, just because a lot of these characters don't really necessarily need a very long introduction. I mean, we all know the classic royalty that sleeps around, so that's, you know, he's a prince, so obviously he has more than one woman, and then
yeah, spoiled little rich kid.
Yeah,
yeah, very believable that he would do not much but lay around and womanize and not care about anything but himself.
Yeah, and then you start intertwining that with ancient Egyptian gods, which if you know any about that mythology by watching movies or history, you know that they have a lot of issues between themselves and then when they mess with mortals. So
yeah, they're more than happy to use mortals to further their own ends, and as you said, they often don't get along, so they're more than happy to use mortals as kind of cannon fodder to try to, "Oh, you want to defeat this god? I'll be more than happy to help you out and give you a weapon to use against her. Well, I don't have to risk myself."
Yeah, so yeah. So the way she gets the Witchblade, you know, summoning Anubis, it was totally believable. I didn't really, obviously you don't need a backstory for him because you know who he is. And then, you know, giving her, I guess you'll call it willpower to prove herself to the prince, you know, it's also believable that the Witchblade would accept her. I mean, she's a woman. She's obviously very sure of herself.
She's hot.
Yeah, that too. and I mean it's all done well, and it doesn't feel rushed. You know, when we read 1 through 8, obviously like you said, it's a couple of years beforehand. This doesn't feel rushed. It feels, you know, just natural time. It's their wedding weekend. You know, she has to take care of it quick. And, you know, by summoning another god, he has an idea of how to defeat her. And then the ending was actually really cool. It leaves on a nice little classic cliffhanger of both of them. I assume she's also clenching her fist and they're about to fight.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe we wouldn't have been better off starting with this.
Yeah, actually. I guess we'll
see.
But, you know, starting off with what we did, we kind of understand a little bit more about the Witchblade and you know, how it picks its people and its place in history. So it does, you know, it doesn't raise as many questions, and it just kind of lets you enjoy the story a little bit more.
Yeah, that's probably true. I will say, too, this double-page spread where we see the prince meet up with the goddess again, and we see Princess Raquel praying, and then Anubis comes. That page is really awesome.
Yeah.
Montage with, you know, a lot of different scenes, little vignettes, progressing the story along. Extremely well done.
Yeah, the detail on Anubis is ridiculous, from his headpiece, his belt, the shackles he has. I mean, talk about it gives you the general idea that's a god.
Yeah, Ken Chua did the majority of this art, and his art is amazing. So, yeah, I very much enjoyed it. As you said, it all takes place, you know, over the course of a single day, the beginning of this wedding weekend. So, not a lot to go into as far as story, but definitely enjoyable. I can't wait to read the next issue and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it really helps that, you know, she has a clear purpose of why she wants the Witchblade. She's trying to get, she's trying to get from point A to point B. It's not like it just chose her randomly and she's trying to figure out how to use it, if she even wants it. No, she's going to use whatever she can to get the prince to notice her, and, you know, to get that god off her back, off his back. And, yeah, I we'll see what happens next issue.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Join us on the next episode for Tales of the Witchblade 8.
Also, I want to mention that interview where Matt Hawkins was talking about not exactly knowing the origin of the artifacts was actually on another Top Cow-centered podcast, which is called Donuts and Top Cow, and that's actually the official podcast of Top Cow. So if you want to find that, I think they're available on iTunes, or you can just Google Donuts and Top Cow, and you'll find their Facebook and their Twitter feed and all that stuff. So just want to give them a shout out. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Don't forget, you can like us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource. Or you can email us at thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. And of course, you can check out our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. If you click on the Top Cow Chronology page there, you'll see on the right hand side there's a Comic Vine logo. If you click on that, that'll take you directly to the chronology, so you can get an idea where we're headed. You can find my YouTube videos there. You can find Manny's blog, sketch gallery, a lot of good stuff on there. So check it out, and we'd love to hear from you, hear feedback, let us know how we're doing, and don't forget to join us next time for Tales of the Witchblade number 8.